Blog Talk Radio.
As much as though there might be lightning, rain, and a storm. But don't think this is beyond the norm. This is part of the greatest plan to nurture and cleanse the earth. Make human beings realize that there's a greater work, that one should immerse oneself not in a dream, but one seldom of a clean one's divine image, get out and swim it. Blessings and greetings, and blessings for those who are alive, because when things stay alive, it's for a time, it's for the life. So our testing of the kindness to us, our rock and soul, our mercies, this is the Blog Talk Radio, and we are Soul Talk. This is Soul Talk 793 Problems Teaching to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, presentation number 16. Baruch Hashem, blessings our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessings upon the entire human family. Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now at 9:03 on September 3rd, and it's now 7:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. USA. By soul actualization, an essential topic of discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelites, Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. Our phone numbers, we want to make the book slightly more organic. It's 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. Peace and pleasantly. And let's now turn down the storm. Back down to the discussion, which should hopefully be within the realm of norm. Whoa, here we go. We hope to have a really big shoe today. And we are joined today by our two co-hosts. We'll start with the younger. We'll go to the elder. We have Rob Walker, a good dude from Brooklyn, now actually trotting the streets of Brooklyn. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Don. Good morning. How's everybody doing this morning?
All right, the heart is pumping, we're jumping. Let's bring on now our elder statesman co-host. We have Dennis Ryan, our Rambam Nesher Gadol, great eagle activist, I should say, teacher and student of Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Maimon Maimonides. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Don, Rob, and all our wonderful listeners.
Good morning, Dennis.
Just one.
Peace and love, yes.
I just want to mention to everyone that we do have an international audience, and we basically are seeing now that the let me just see here. Gentlemen, I have an emergency with my work, so I'm going to let you two start to talk. And hopefully I'll be to join in as soon as possible. Usually I have a segue into today's. So you gentlemen, you start to talk, and hopefully I'll be join you within 5 minutes. Okay?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Dennis.
Rob.
Dennis. How are you, sir?
Okay, yourself?
Not bad. Interesting week, you know. It just makes sense that he would have an emergency in the, you know, during the show, because it's been an interesting week. Earlier this week, I joined a friend of mine who he graduated from seminary. I think it's Nyack College, and I think after this graduating class, it's going to be his class is the last class leaving the college. The college is closing down, and so it's a bit bittersweet. But he happened to be one of the last you know classes, as I said, and he just got his Master's of Divinity. And so I asked, I said, well, you know, where do you want to go from here? I said, you've been, you know, following the Lord for many, many years. And he said he really didn't know. He said, but one of the things that stood out to him was grief counseling. And I said, well, why? He said, well, because going to church all these years, he felt that the church never really had an answer to, you know, shepherding people through grief. You know, people lose loved ones, they lose children, they lose parents, you know, and or just things happen in life. And they often don't know who to turn to, and it seems that the ministry is so focused on just doing, you know, other things that it might overlook the fact that people are in, you know, a great deal of pain dealing with loss. And he himself lost his mother about a year and a half ago now. I think it's coming up on a year and a half. And yeah, I remember going to church with him, and his mother was with him every single Sunday in church. She was 83 years old. And so he's still dealing with that. And then he lost his brother 5 months ago. So his mom and his brother didn't live to see him graduate, you know, after all the work he had, you know, put into this, you know, this dream. His mother would watch him walk down the aisle and get his degree. And he says, you know, we need something as a church body, but as a society where we can help people navigate through grief and talk to each other and help us to understand what's happening around us in spite of what we feel that we've lost. So I want to ask you, what's your take on grief counseling? I mean, how do you think it should be handled? How do you think it should be managed?
Well, there's nothing wrong with grief counseling. However, each person has their own feelings, and sometimes it's very hard to figure out what feeling is being damaged by grief. So some people will say, well, I didn't expect it. Some people will say, I didn't know it could affect me so much. Others could say, well, life goes on. So what we have is a broad spectrum of trying to figure out the personal needs of somebody who's in grief. The question is, should we be moseying around or probing or whatever to find out what that specific need is?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we don't have time to do that, but we have to nurture people to the point that they must understand that grief is part of life and nobody lives forever.
Right.
Nobody.
I'm back in the conversation. I'm not exactly. I hear you talking about grief. Can someone just recapitulate for me what was the beginning of this discussion?
Well, I talked about the fact that a friend of mine graduated from seminary this week. I went to his graduation, and he got a master's in divinity. But he lost his mother a year and a half ago, and he lost his brother 5 months ago, and neither of them lived to see him, you know, walk the aisle and get his degree and, you know, celebrate with him. And when I asked him, I said, you know, what type of ministry do you want to get into? He said he was thinking about grief counseling because it seems that the church doesn't have a way to deal with grief. People are hurting and coming every Sunday or, you know, every weekend and trying to figure out how to deal with loss of a loved one, of a, you know, someone close, a mother, child, whatever. And so he's trying to figure out a way to maybe use his education to help people in that realm. And what Dennis is saying is that, you know, it is a part of life. We have to figure out how to deal with it because everybody has to go. And so, you know, we don't really know how – he basically was saying that we don't know how people take grief, you know, how they receive it. Everyone receives it differently. Everyone interprets it differently. And to his point, everyone's relationship with the person that is lost is different. And so, you know, if you have five siblings and you say, well, like my mom and I are extremely close, extremely close. Like, I'm in love with my mom. Like, my mom is my, you know, that's my buddy. And you know, coming back into New York City, she was like, I'm so glad that you're back. And so I said, I really missed you. And because I take her places, I drive around, I go to her appointments with her, we stop and get whatever she wants. I'll sit in the car for 3 hours if necessary so she can have what she needs. And because in my mind, I go, well, when I didn't remember, you know, being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, she was there and she was the one that nurtured me so I could be in a position to help her. And so I think of it that way. Like, it's my duty to be the best that I can be to her, because she did so much for me that I probably can't even remember. So that was kind of where we were going with it.
Okay, if I can just chime in. You know, there's a specific way that grief is carried out according to Jewish tradition. And basically, there is the day, the news, and then there's the day of the burial, then the actual burial, and there's a 7-day mourning period. Now, this is the customs of Israel. It's not to tell anyone to do it this way, but
the intent, and then there's a 30-day period where there's a commemoration 30 days after the burial or the passing, depends on the custom. So the idea is to, you know, the individuals who are suffering the grief or the mourners, they should be aware they have an option, that it's better to let it all out in the beginning, meaning there's nothing wrong crying, nothing feeling sad, nothing feeling pain. But to bury those feelings, to appear, some, so to speak, stoic or pious, maybe a person might self-perceive themselves or self-misperceive themselves during this intense period of, say, like the first day to the 30 days. I think that it can set up for a long-range issue where all of a sudden, where unexpectedly, say, like a half year later or a year later or 2 years, 5 years later, all of a sudden a person feels this tremendous heartache because they kept their feelings inside. So as far as grief counseling, there is grief counseling going on of all different types. I think if a person needs it because they reach a level of dysfunctionality or they're just not in step with their normal, you know, daily living responsibilities, I would say I would advocate. But, you know, a person also has to take counseling same time too. Part of the grieving process is that at one point, not to forget the person who passed on, but to move on as a tribute to that person, to try to take their positive attributes. The Rebbe used to say about his own wife, the Rebbetzin, Chaim Mushka, the Chayitin Alibo, that the living will take to heart the thought, speech, and action of the person they solely so dearly miss right now and bring them to other. And so to speak, they're reviving their spirit, reintroducing their spirit to the world in terms of their speech, their conduct, their whatever they were dedicated to that they see as a positive attribute. And that's what I have to contribute to this conversation.
I would agree. Dennis, your take?
Well, any positive idea is good because what it does, it takes your mind off the negative side. And we must remember that there are facts involved, and it is, we are mortal. We cannot live forever. However, we don't know the when. When we are taken off this planet, we don't know that. So you better each day think positive until that happens. Why? Because it's a waste of feelings if you think of the negative side. Think positive, and you will have a better understanding as to the when involved as the length of our lives. We all have different times that we can. And therefore, those are the facts. Your feelings have to adjust to the facts. You can have all the feelings you want, but we don't have a remedy for every one of your feelings. We do, however, ask you to understand what life is about. And when life is taken, it may be a sad thing, but think of the positives. Think of all the good the person did while I were here, and you should continue in that tradition.
Yeah, I mean, when Moses died, you know, the Lord told Joshua, said, my servant Moses is dead, so we need to, of course, understand that we are here as servants. We're not here of our own fruition. We're not here to just kind of have a party every single day. We're actually here to work, and work doesn't mean a job. Work means a function, a purpose. And so when Moses, you know, we discussed this in a prior conversation, Moses passed away, Joshua had the benefit of having Moses as a guide all these years, and the Lord said to Joshua, I will be with you as I was with Moses, which was a double blessing in a sense. Because he had the physical instruction and he had the spiritual covering, both times. And so, you know, I think what we do is that we look at life from a selfish standpoint because, I mean, it's difficult not to, with all the distractions. We feel we go to a job, we put many hours into the job. We do a lot of things, mundane things that we really don't want to be doing with our time just to pay our bills and pay our rent and buy food and do different things. So the quality time that we have with the ones we love is usually minimized to what we can spare based on our responsibilities. And therein lies the problem because we never feel that we have enough time to enjoy life because we're spending a lot of the time just doing other things. So even if the person lives to be 75 years old, there's only 75 summers. It's not like you right. weren't with them every single summer. In 75 summers, you might have been around your parents maybe 10 summers, 15, maybe the years that you grew up. But once you become an adult and you have your own family, those times go away, and you may see your parents, 10 times in a whole year if you don't live in the same state. So 365 days multiplied by 20 years, but you only spend 10 days out of the year with your parents or your loved ones, that might be less than 100 days in your whole life you see the people that you love. You never really think of it that way because, you talk to them on the phone, so it makes you feel closer. You may FaceTime. But if you're being honest with yourself, once you grow up, you don't really see your family anymore, your kids, your parents, because you're so consumed with just trying to survive and build something that the time gets away from you. So it's a beautiful thing when you understand the moment, and that's what you have to be in, is in the moment. Instead of trying to think about what you're going to do 3 months from now, call if your parents are with you or the person that you love is with you, call them today. And, have a 10-minute right. conversation have a 10-minute conversation every single day to make that a priority, like brushing your teeth,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Make it a priority to reach out to the ones that you love daily. So if and when they're taken from you, because like Dennis said, we don't know when, we have invested as much as we were humanly possible, capable of doing, in loving them and getting love back from them. And so you don't feel like you've been robbed as much. So
right.
That's all.
If I can just chime in, what you mentioned about that 10-minute time with the loved one, I can just tell you that in 2016, I've lost 5 elders in my family, which is a lot. Some people lost more, some people lost less, some people lost. And I can tell you, my only regret, because, no relationships are perfect. They're always works in progress. The only regrets I have is that could I have made another phone call? And I know there were times I could have. I was just too exhausted. When I think back now, I might have been too exhausted then, but now I realize I exhausted my opportunities as of now. And not that I'm feeling, I'm just saying going forward to share with other people, as you just mentioned, Rob, it's very important to share our life experiences because we are broadcasting around the world. I just want to mention parenthetically, we're still pulling in about 81.5% in America, 3.7% in Canada. Jamaica, the diamond of Caribbean, has dipped below 3%. I want to see you guys get back up to 5%, 10% of our listening audience. So I just interacted with some people from the island a couple weeks ago. Australia, 2.22%. And also Israel, last but not least, 2.22%. So I think it's very important that, while we do get into the literature, and that's one of the primary purposes is to expose people to literature, Torah, Tanakh literature, which I believe are expressions of godliness through language that man can understand. It's also important to have these type of conversations because Rob so rightfully stated, and I'll turn to Dennis for this, that we don't have enough family time, especially in the modern age. I am old enough to remember I would come home every day. I come home from school at 3 o'clock. I do my homework maybe half hour, hour. Then I go run in suburbia on my bicycle, play baseball, basketball, football, and I come 6 o'clock. My father and mother, my brother and I would sit down to dinner for many, many, many years. This is probably from the age of, 8, 9 years old to my high school year. And then after college, it got a little bit difficult because I had my schedule. So I'm saying I had a good 10-year run when I sat down with my parents, aside from the times they went on vacation or I took a little break or whatever, I went away. So I can just tell you that I have no regrets, and there were some differences over those times. But if I could have had one more time with them, I would like to, but I can't. So all I can take is from those memories and share them with you now that, your family time, and I'm going to ask Dennis to chime in, your family time is your time for expressing gratitude to the Creator that you have such an environment of loved ones surrounding you. Dennis?
Yes, strongest feeling that you can have when someone passes or dies is the word continuation. Life goes on. Your feelings are temporary. Your feelings are not going to be with you for the rest of your life, but the continuation is going to happen. In other words, what are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to do the day after? Are you going to be destined to sit in sad feelings about everything for the rest of your life? You must remember that the generations of people who are part of this continuity. The passing of somebody only means that there's going to be someone else to replace them as time goes by. And that is the positive idea of sad and bad feelings, is that those are temporary. God is always with us. God does not come and go. God is a constant. And that continuity is passed on to you, and that is called tomorrow. Is your tomorrow going to be the same as it was 10, 20 years ago? Or are you going to say, I can do better? Either way, it's up to the individual to think positive so the continuity will continue with mankind.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, you know, Don, you now reside in the neighborhood in which I grew up in. You know, you, in fact, you're a block away from where I grew up. I know that neighborhood in the 70s. I know it in the 80s. I know it in the 90s. And then, you know, I moved away from it in the 2000s when I became a husband and things of that nature. And I remember what it was. I remember, and I see what it is now. And it's interesting. I mean, there's some subtle changes, some great changes, and then there's some things that have never changed. And when I look back, I think about my, you know, I think about block parties and community and how people kind of related with each other. And now, you know, you have, you know, huge buildings coming into the neighborhood and overpriced housing and people can't afford to enjoy their day-to-day life. And it there's a bit of melancholy, you know, a cloud of melancholy is what I would like to call it, forced in by what I also call well-dressed distractions. So the melancholy is the well-dressed distractions are the finances. And, you know, so I'm not saying that there weren't always people on welfare or food stamps. I mean, we need to do what we have to do as a society to survive. But as you said, Don, there was the commonality that I remember was that we had dinner at a certain time. We went to bed at a certain time. We watched television. You know, we had block parties. I mean, real block parties where people came outside and there were tables set up and there was music playing and there were games and prizes and they cooked food and, you know, everyone knew each other. And if I did something my neighbor saw, they would say, listen, I'm going to tell your mom, Rob. And I'm like, oh, no, please don't tell, you know. They were able to talk to me as an elder, and I would respect them, and I wouldn't think to talk back or be disrespectful in any kind of way. And so it's like the grief that I sometimes feel is not just in the loss of the people that I love and my grandparents who I love dearly, but it's the time in which I spent with them that were good times. And it's not just about the time. It's the quality of the time that we need to really pay attention to because, you know, for people spending time in prison, that's horrible time. They wish they would rather be dead than be spending, you know, life in prison. So time is relative to the circumstance that the time is being spent in and what you're doing with it. And so I just think back again to the 70s and the 80s when I rode my bike in the neighborhood and up and down, you know, Utica Avenue, Eastern Parkway, going down to Granite Plaza, going through Prospect Park. Hot summer days, you know, just eating an icy and, you know, the ice cream truck would come and my grandmother would sit in the window with this little change purse. It seemed like she had $1,000 in this little purse. And everybody got an ice cream cone. Sometimes my mom was like, oh, no, you don't need those sweets. My grandmother would be like, you come over here. Leave those kids alone. I got it. And everybody get an ice cream cone or get, you know, some chewing gum or we play hide and go seek. We play kick the can. You know, and we just had a great time. And it was a diverse community during that time. They had Italians and Jewish people and black people and Latino people. And so it's like 50 years later, the neighborhood is changing again. It's going back. It's kind of reverting back somewhat to what it was 50 years ago. And so minus all the big buildings. And what I'm trying to say about the building is that it kills the community aspect of the community depending on where the buildings are located. How the houses made it possible for people to, you know, to commune different. It was different. And Utica Avenue, Sterling Place, you know, Prospect Place, Park Place, Bergen Street, St. Mark's. I mean, all these were, we all knew. I mean, you could go five blocks and you would still know somebody because everybody played together.
Right.
It was a central location.
Right.
It was a central location. Now, if you go two blocks away, you don't know anybody because people are coming and going like the wind. 6 months, they pay the rent. They can't pay. They're going back to where they came from. Some new people are moving in. And it's a quick turnover of people. So people are not growing up. They're experiencing the block for a year, and then they leave. So it's no camaraderie. And so that is a different type of – obviously, it's a different type of grief. It's like – so the kids don't have the same view of what it means to be a kid anymore in a community. And not to say that there are some communities that do have those experiences, but that's Park Slope more, Cobble Hill. You know, Crown Heights is struggling with that a little bit because, you know, it's a different, you know, it's a different type of energy. People are coming and going fast because they can't afford it. You know, $2,000 a month for rent for an apartment that used to be $500. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Don.
Right. No, I'm saying, but I can tell you this. I mean, since I walk the streets of Sterling Place and Schenectady Avenue, there are two places on Sterling between Schenectady and Troy, and on the corner of almost on the corner of Schenectady and between President and St. John's, where there are gatherings some, you know, more frequently. And then on President Street, where I used to live between Utica and Schenectady, they also have like weekend gatherings. Like they put up the tents, the pitch tents today, and I saw some guys, you know, dancing as they were putting up the tents. But that's more like adult-oriented stuff. So I hear what you're saying, Rob. And, you know,
right.
People don't realize the focus of the future generations is based on how do we deal with our youngsters, our children, our grandchildren, those
yes,
are blessed great-grandchildren.
Yes.
And yes. the enemies of God, I'll be very black and white about it, have always sought to corrupt the youth. That's,
yes.
If they indoctrinate the youth, they know they have the next generation.
Yes.
And so for
Absolutely.
Us to reach out as elderly people, we're three grandfathers, I think Dennis is even a great-grandfather, his idea to remind those younger than us, and there's plenty younger than us listening to the program, that your children, first of all, yourself, you have to take care of yourself, you have to maintain healthy relationships with your spouse, whether you're the husband or the wife, and next thing is to immerse yourselves in your children. Because,
yes.
you know, how you water the flower and how you expose it to the sunlight and how you deal, you know, you take care of it during those cloudy days, you'll see that the flower, the child, the soul of your child, which is the flower of the human being developing into a fully matured human being, is so precious and so important. And I'm going to turn to Dennis and then Rob Vivek. And then I want to go back to what was originally going to be the end, the opening discussion, but this is a very important discussion. I have no problem taking away some time from what we originally intended to present because I had an emergency with right now. It seems to be temporary solved. Dennis, your take on these matters, that priorities, how do we encourage people to take up priorities in their own life to make sure they will reap the benefit of investing themselves and their families properly?
Well, look, there's one thing we know about life is the word change. Change is constant, present, and evolving. What you did when you were younger and when you do later is not the same thing. You may have the same intentions, but everything around you is changing. Nothing stands still. So the continuity that goes on, and that's why we always have younger generations ready to take our place as we get older and die off. But that's a change that's going on. It's a given. It's going to happen. And that's one of the reasons why you need God's help. God's help to help you understand and believe in the things that you first learned when you were small are still valid today as you get older. And some things will change, other things don't. God does not change. He is the constant for everybody, and he is the backbone for continuation for everything. So we have feelings. Our feelings may come and go. They may hurt us. They may make us feel better. But change is ever present. We see it in the money. We see it in the food. We see it in values. We see it in the media everywhere. Everything is set to change. And whatever didn't work in the past, people will try to find an answer so that they can readjust things. But we need to stick to our guns. We need to stick to the truth. We need to get closer to God. So you may say, I haven't done enough. That's nice. But what are you going to do to make up for the loss that you may have heard? So sitting around complaining does not help out anything, not even yourself. You have the power to change. Get with it and understand it.
Right. Get with it. That's right.
I think there is a saying. I don't know the source of it. It's better to better than cursing the darkness, illuminate the darkness. It's I'm paraphrasing his statement.
Don, it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness.
Okay.
Mm.
So that's an important point. A little bit of light puts away a lot of darkness. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to go back to what I originally wanted to present because I think it's a very time pertinent issue because there are certain members within my own community whose descendants are going through some very rough times medically. And I saw this written, it was printed out called Hear My Story. I'm going to be quoting something here to have us reassess how we look at those who facilitate healing. Yes, God is the healer of all flesh, but there's a certain profession, and it's subdivided into different levels of professions down to someone who was not part of the profession. And let's see how this goes. So basically what happened was this is a Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz. He was very sickly. And he had gone for medical treatments, and he had taken medications, and nothing worked. So he went to the Lubavitch Rebbe, maybe it should be a blessing for us, recommended that he should go to a Dr. Abba Seligson, who was a well-known doctor in the Crown Heights neighborhood. And the Rebbe would refer people when they sought his blessing for matters of health. So encouraged by the Rebbe's assurance, I went to see Dr. Seligson. He prescribed some sort of medication, which I took for a period of time, but it didn't help. I was out of ideas. I was deeply frustrated. After all those treatments and after the Rebbe's promise, I really hoped that something would change. So I wrote to the Rebbe again, and I followed his guidance and gone to see Dr. Seligson. I recounted all the doctor's instructions, and nothing had helped. In my letter, I quote the Rebbe's own words, "Go to Seligson, you will succeed." What, I asked, am I going to do now? So I received the Rebbe's answer in his own handwriting, written on the margins of the note I'd sent to him. Of his referral to Dr. Seligson, the Rebbe wrote, "The Torah teaches that the healer shall heal. The Torah has given doctors the authority and the power to heal. As for my question of what to do next, the Rebbe drew out an arrow to the words, 'Go to Seligson, you will succeed.' This is how his assurance would be fulfilled. As I understood, the Rebbe was explaining that when turning to a doctor, one should recognize that the Torah gives doctors the authority and the power to heal, that it is the healing is ultimately coming from God, and the doctor is merely an agent for the divine healing. As an aside from the original Talmudic expression, is that a doctor has been given authority to heal. In his note, the Rebbe added something even more significant, quote, the authority and the power. In other words, if our sages emphasized that the Torah allows doctors to act as healers, this also carries an implication that the Torah gives them the ability to draw down healing from above. Following the Rebbe's response, I turned to Dr. Seligson. I shared the content of my correspondence with the Rebbe and stressed that I was turning to him in adherence with the Torah's empowerment that he could heal me. He prescribed me another medication, and thank God the problem went away once and for all." So here we see the gentleman that, you know, a person had taken the advice to see the doctor and then went back and said, well, I went to him and it didn't seem to work, and he was advised again, this time to know that a doctor has the power to heal. A person goes through a certain period of apprenticeship to medical school, and then internship, and then becomes a medical resident. Now someone who I work with is doing this process. So there's a refinement of the skills, but at the same time, one is making oneself a blessing for healing. And unfortunately, I think doctors have this in their own life. And Rambam even wrote a prayer for doctors. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Dennis, but he wrote a prayer that doctors should be vessels for healing people. Not that they are the source. That's a little bit too self-centered and a little bit arrogant, but rather that human beings, in this particular case, the profession of doctors have been, and if people don't feel comfortable with Torah, there's a divine, there's natural law and there's a divine law. And many natural laws are actually the garments of divine law, meaning certain things can be activated by being aware of it and are praying for it and telling a doctor, you have been given the power to heal by Almighty God, and I trust in you fully that you will carry out God's mission. Imagine if you went to your doctor's office and told your standard doctor, you know, let's say 40 years ago when I would see a doctor, he'd be smoking a cigarette. He probably would, you know, like choke on the smoke. Like, what? Hmm. You know, I mean, and that was when doctors still made home visits and this and that. So I'd like to turn to you gentlemen for some sort of feedback on this idea that it wouldn't hurt if we told people in the medical profession, or even therapists, psychiatrists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, chiropractors, people who practice acupuncture, that they are all the multi-branch system of healing to come to the human family experience. And if perhaps if we make this more widely known to people all around the world, people will have more respect for the doctors, and doctors will realize that actually that while they have the ability to do what they do, they're getting a blessing, and maybe they have to reestablish their own relationship with God. And I just want to mention one thing. I've never met a doctor who said he wasn't, you know, like impressed or amazed by the human body. Not all of them say, well, you know, this is God's work, whatever, for whatever reason they have this perspective. But the body is such a profound entity because it's a vessel for holding the human soul and divine image that hopefully this can a real turnaround in the way people are treated in this world. And this is a teaching from, you know, a tzaddik like the Rebbe, a very righteous man, saying it's not about, you know, he's revealing the teachings that the doctor should know he is an agent of God. Dennis.
Hmm. Well, the doctor is not a direct agent of God because he's not an angel and he doesn't represent heaven. So therefore, he represents mortals. Mortals are imperfect. And to me, the doctor I always like is the one that has common sense. Not only do they have the skills that they were taught in medical school, but they use common sense. Some doctors are so pedantic that they'll only follow the rules. And if they don't understand your problem, they will refer you to a specialist. But then again, during Mayamati's time, there was no real specialist. You had to be a doctor with a full concept of the word. You were responsible for your patient's physical health and mental health. So Mayamati said, you're responsible because you're a doctor, and you must be able to treat another human's body, whatever their problem is. Today, due to change and change and change, we have specialties all over the place. We got a specialist for every part of your body. But does that mean because the person is a specialist in one thing that they know about the other? Where does common sense end and where does it take over? We have to be very careful. If you don't like the doctor or something is not working, we today would say, we'll try some other doctor and see, do you have a better result or not? Or you ask your friends, which doctor do they rely on? In other words, this is a human condition where humans are taking care of humans. This is not the almighty interfering, because what happens under God will happen under any type of doctor. So what can you do? You can only be more patient. You're doing well with one doctor. You must ask around, friends, anybody, to recommend another doctor and try what you can. Because in the long run, you will be taken care of. But it isn't always the exact way at the beginning to find out what's wrong with you. If it's hidden so far in your body, who knows? But the medical profession will find a way. You must be patient because they are humans too.
Beautiful. Rob, your take on these matters?
Well, I mean, it's a long answer, so we don't have enough time to talk about it. But I would say this, that, you know, as Dennis stated, and I believe to this extent, that not everybody believes in God. Therefore, everybody's not an agent of God. Therefore, their healing is their perspective on healing cannot be of God if they don't know God. In other words, if I don't know the language, I can't speak the language. I have to know the language. What is the language? What is God's language? So these people who are in the profession but not in the realm and in an understanding of God's will, they will not heal because they don't hear God's voice. No one who doesn't hear God's voice can do God's work. It's point blank, period. People will say to me, well, wow, the Bible or the Torah was written by the hands of man. No, they were written by the hands of prophets. They were written by the hands of specific people, elect people that God chose because they heard God's voice. People think because they don't hear God the same way that the prophets are the simple men and women, whoever they might have been. No, these are elect. You know, it's like you have a special machine for a special job. How do we know? If we're building buildings, we have certain type of bulldozers to pick up the dirt. We have machines for rocks. We have machines to drill. Every machine is used for a different purpose. So But again, those machines all have one understanding. That's what their occupation is. That's what their purpose is when they were created. The man operating them or the woman operating them know that's the purpose of them. Back to my original point, if you don't know God, you can't serve God. So you could be a doctor, lawyer, teacher, baker, candlestick maker. It doesn't make a difference. The voice of God has to resonate in your heart and your mind for your hand to be the thing that moves and behooves you to do God's will. So you can be a doctor, and a lot of doctors say, well, they don't believe in theology. They believe in just the science, but the science is created by God. God is the master scientist. And so, again, we go back to a point where it is not about was it the Jewish doctor or this doctor or black doctor, white doctor, or Asian doctor, or acupuncture or Chinese Western medicine versus it's about the will of God being done through the individual who's serving God with their profession. Some people get into the profession of medicine to make money. It's not about healing. It's about how much money can I make and how many things can I get out of the occupation. Some people get into it because they actually want to heal people. But you can't, again, God does the healing. So if God does the healing and you're the instrument of healing and you don't hear from God, how can you heal? You'll use all the things that man has created just to treat people but not to heal people. So that's why, I mean, how do you have so many doctors with so much sickness? Because they're creating treatments, and they're not trying to heal, because if you heal the person, then you lose a patient. The medical profession will crash without patients. That's the root of the core of their work is for people to be sick. So what would a doctor tell you? Well, you know what? Don't eat these next things for the next 6 months, and what you're eating will cause you not to be sick because the thing that you're eating is causing your sickness. How many times do you hear that? You don't hear those things because at the core of what our society is doing is not healing. It is creating patients so they can keep money coming in. It's justifiable homicide in a sense, and that's how I look at a lot of different things. It's like being a teacher. If you're a teacher anointed by God, you teach the truth. If you're a teacher that's not anointed by God who doesn't hear God's voice, you don't teach. You teach nonsense. I mean, you're still being paid. So who cares? The parents are at work. They don't know what you're teaching that kid. So that's why when you have schools that are centered on God, like a yeshiva or whatever it may be, the root of the school is biblical Torah information. And in addition, you teach the vocation. God is the primary; the vocation is the secondary. Once you come on to God, the vocation is now it's put in its proper perspective. So I have to agree with Dennis and say that what they're supposed to be and what they end up being are contrary to each other based on the nature of their relationship with God. That's my understanding on it.
Right. Well, my only thing is that, again, of course, you know, they are not angels, doctors. There's actually in the interdimensional, you know, portions of the Torah, there are certain angels who are considered to be the head of certain missions. And the angel Raphael, which also is Raphael. Raphael is an expression of healing. But, you know, sometimes even doctors who are not believers in God act as their agents because they know the technical skills of, say, doing an operation. I mean, I myself once had an emergency appendectomy at the tender age of 23. And I don't know, you know, they weren't, I don't know who they were, Orthodox people. I don't know even what the type of doctors they were, Orthodox Jewish, but they saved my life. Because they had the technical skills. So even if the person is not a believer in God, but they know the technical skills, which ultimately are rooted in some sort of godly law, that meaning, you know, the thing is this. Unfortunately, in modern society, especially in the West, they're making a compartment for everything, and everything's in a box. And therefore, there's disconnection from this box of healing to this box of dentistry and this box of – but it's all one body because it's one soul in one body. So I think this is something that people really struggle with. And I'd like to continue on the theme for a couple of minutes before we move on to Mishle. From the Gate of Trust, talking about healing. And I'd like to get – I'm interested in getting the feedback from Robin Dennis and Ron. So Rabbeinu Bachaya, who lived over 1,000 years in España, which is now known as Spain, said that when we discuss the matters of health and illness, a person, first of all, even before the first person to understand, I'm saying parenthetically, he doesn't say it here, but before a person puts his trust that the doctor has the power to heal, we have to put our trust in the Creator. And we have, at the same time, too, we have to make our human efforts to make sure that our continued health is being maintained by using natural means, and to seek healings methods that people are used to using to cure diseases. Like, for instance, I don't think there was a homeopathic medicine which would have healed my flaming appendix, which is about to burst and spread the poison all over my body. But rather, we need to believe, as it says in Exodus 21:19, and he surely should be healed. So even without relying on the cause of health and illness, that they in themselves can aid or harm a person, rather than any health issue, meaning stout health or illness, is only because of what's coming from the Creator. So when a person relies on Creator, the Creator will heal him or her from their illness. As it says in Psalms 107:20, he will send forth his word and he will heal them. So it is possible, Rabbeinu Bachai mentions, that the Almighty can use a substance that by its very nature is very harmful, and I'll speak about that in 1 minute, as is well known from the stone of Elisha, the prophet, and harmful water, and God remedied the water with salt. And so, too, that the water was bitter when the nation of Israel was in Marah on their journey towards Mount Sinai. And in Exodus 15:25, and the Lord instructed them concerning a piece of wood, we cast in the water. And the ancient sages said that was the wood of the Hardufni plant, which is a bitter tree. So bitter water was sweetened by bitter. And also we see in Isaiah in 38:21, let them take a cake of fresh figs and lay it for a plaster on the boil and we heal it. And it mentions that there was a king Hezekiah who had stricken with boils, and Isaiah healed him by placing figs on his flesh. So the Midrash Mechilta mentions that figs by themselves are not so good for healthy flesh, but a miracle occurred, God's allowing it to happen. The figs were successfully used to treat the boils. And my own personal footnote, which I've brought up in previous programs, is that I was once treated with strep, not strep throat. I had a very high fever. I'm forgetting the first word for it. I guess it's a senior moment. But I went to a homeopathic doctor, and he treated me with poison ivy. Now, poison ivy, generally speaking, is something which can damage a person, cause them to itch and scratch and all this stuff. But it was ground down to bitter tablets, but it took away my high fever. So we see that there's many ways, many scenarios, and that way we can't limit our perspectives on God, because he just, but to acknowledge he's the healer of our flesh, and we believe that he will help us. The same thing too, we'll participate in our wellness, or participate in seeking a solution to our illness, combined with the belief that the doctors are agents of Hashem at one level or another, whether consciously or subconsciously, hopefully we'll get better outcomes. Robert.
I'm going to stand on what I said a moment ago to say this. I agree that a wicked person, or a person, when I say wicked, I mean a person who intentionally ignores the will of God, because that is how I look at it. I mean, I don't know. I just think that we live in a time down where we have to, like Dennis said, we have to be very careful where we put our trust. It is not to say that a person that doesn't believe in God doesn't have the power to, you know, to do the job and come up with the remedies that are, some of them are very simple remedies. You have appendicitis, remove the appendix, or do the conventional work. There's a high level of power of healing. There are people who have had cancer and then the doctor said, you know, they had stage 4 or something, and then they go back to the doctor and they don't see anything. That's a different type of healing. So there are levels to healing. There's levels to everything. You know, there's a fourth heaven, fifth dimension, sixth, whatever it might be. So in heaven, so on earth. So, you know, people see in the Bible says, you know, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive our Father who is in heaven. Give our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Are we bringing the heavenly understanding to earth? That's the goal while we're here, is to for them to mimic each other, I would imagine. I guess what I'm saying is that, of course, a doctor doesn't have to be religious to be capable of, performing a surgery or prescribing something that is socially, you know, known to cure, or a procedure that's known. But I'm saying to you, I think on a higher level, the more in tune with God you are, the more power you have. I guess that's what I'm alluding to. I'm not saying that by going to school and, you know, because there are people from different cultures who have different belief systems, and everybody who is a man, who's a doctor or a practitioner, believes in Jesus Christ or believes in Abraham or Moses or believe, you know, bless. So we do have people from all over the world who have these powerful skills. But remember, since we understand this, that it's the same God. So your non-belief in God doesn't change the power of God. God can still use anything to perform his will if he wants that person to be healed. So he can use a person who's an atheist or an agnostic and give them the power, because if that person is special to God, God's going to see that they're healed no matter what. If you know about Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, former president, he had cancer several times, or so they say, and they went back and they said they don't see anything. He's almost 100 years old.
Wow.
If you just get a chance to read about his journey. But what's been consistent in him is that he's served God his whole life. Whether people say, oh, he was a horrible president, that's relative. Yeah, most of them are. But, you know, we're talking about what he has done post what he has done in that position. And, he, you know, by it's been recorded that he works for organizations that help people and do religious things. And so, I mean, I'm just thinking it's of course a person, you know, just to end it, of course a person that is not religious can still perform certain things and do certain things and bring certain results. But I would imagine that the closer you are to God, the different your power. And, again, if the person that's sick goes to a person that is not religious or not a person who is obeying God, if God wants that person healed because he has a purpose for that particular person, the will is going to be done, anyhow you look at it. And if nobody comes, God can heal that person no matter what. If he can do whatever he wants. We kind of limit God's power to man's power. That is completely not the case. And so
right.
I'm not suggesting we take our medical life into our own hands and not go see a doctor. That's foolish. I'm not suggesting that. I'm simply saying that God intervenes in every situation. He knows exactly what he wants the outcome to be, and we have no idea what he's going to do next. We just have to trust in him. So no matter who we go to, we know that if we healed, whatever the outcome is, is what he allowed it to be. That's my point.
Beautiful. Rob, Dennis, excuse me, your take on these matters?
Well, God works in mysterious ways. We don't know exactly what he's doing. We don't know what's on his mind, if he has a mind. We don't know, but we can see the results. People are healed. Now, you got to remember, mm-hmm. in Mayamati's time, the diagnostic that was used was a pint of urine was the only diagnostic tool that they had in the 10th and 11th centuries. And they could tell by the smell, the color, the density, the whatever is floating in the urine, etc. What were the telltale signs that they would have an indication of your health? Today, we use a blood test. And that blood test is sort of like a universal test now that any doctor of any specialty can read and understand. And with a certain amount of common sense, they can diagnose rather quickly what your problem is. Question is, are you going to get the right doctor and give him the right medicine so you can reverse the process if it's possible? So, yes, times have changed and things are looking better. However, one thing I just want to make a slight adjustment, and that is you may not hear the voice because God does not speak to us. So it's not a verbal thing. That's why we say God works in mysterious ways, ways that we humans cannot understand completely. But if you have enough faith and belief, God is there. God is there for a positive outcome for things. So you cannot ignore God because he is really part of your life and is always listening. So whatever problem you have, trust your faith and belief that God will make it a positive outcome if it's all possible and it's part of your plan. So have faith.
Amen. Okay, Jen, we're turning to the last section of today's program, which is basically why we call this about Proverbs teachings to access wisdom and righteousness. So we're by chapter 2, as we concluded chapter 1 last week about the Yolite discussion about wisdom is crying out, and those who do not seek the wisdom, they wind up living foolish type of existences. And even though they might have tranquility, we shouldn't be thrown off by that. So chapter 2 takes another, what if you do accept wisdom? What if the wisdom that is pouring down like water from heaven, as it always is, more frequently the water pours down from heaven. So we're going to these seven verses, and we'll go into some oral Torah traditions concerning a couple of them. And then, of course, we'll wind up with Dennis and Robert, Robert's and Dennis's viewpoints. To chapter 2, verse 1 in Proverbs, also known as Mishle, my son, which also is referring to my daughter, if you accept my words and treasure my commandments, verse 2, to make your ear attentive to wisdom, if you incline your heart to discernment, verse 3, if you call for understanding and raise your voice for discernment, number 4, if you seek it like silver and hunt for it like treasures, 5, then you will understand the fear of the Creator and you will find the knowledge of God. 6, for the Lord gives wisdom from his mouth to come forth knowledge and discernment. 7, he lays sound wisdom for the upright, a shield for those who walk in integrity. So going back to verse 1, a very powerful teaching according to Rashi, what King Solomon was inferring is that when he was calling out to his subjects, and ultimately, because I know the Lubavitch Rebbe told Mayor John Lindsay of blessed memory that this should be taught to his students when he taught in a Christian Sunday school in the 1960s, that Rashi says, you will be my son if you accept my words. Now, there is a common expression, children of God. And we are still children of God, whether we do the Creator's will or not. We could be wayward children. We could be forwardly, positively children. But he's saying here, there's an accentuation by the fact that, for instance, say, if you will remember not to murder and not to steal, not to commit idolatry and not to commit adultery, and you accept these commandments upon your heart, you are my son. And to treasure my commandments and to guard them from being forgotten. So these are things we should be constantly mindful of. We're walking in the street, we're in a traffic jam, we're standing at the cash register, and there's no one to really talk with it, there's no opportunity. But we can think about, hey, you know, I'm blessed because right now I'm not stealing, I'm waiting in line to pay for the food or whatever I'm buying, the clothing, the computer hardware. I'm standing in line because I want to use this time to meditate upon God, and we shall get discernment. And what will happen is Matsuda David in verse 2 mentions that your ear will become more intent, your ear, not just your brain, but your ear, the physical ear will become attentive to wisdom and incline your heart. So get your ear attentive to this wisdom, meaning hearken to hear these words. And don't be surprised when your heart becomes more discerning. And when you want to get understanding and draw close to it, and if you seek it like a treasure, this is the greatest currency that can be, blessed souls. It's accessible to everyone, those who want. There's a commerce involved, meaning study and meditation and prayer and fellowshipping and hunting it like treasures, toiling to acquire discernment, the difference between good and evil, truth and falsehood, by going deep into the words of wisdom. So we of Israel will say, we bring this to our discussion for everyone here. This is the words of the Torah. People have other traditions. They have other wisdoms. And if you have learned that wisdom is great, for it was given from the Almighty, therefore you acquire it. Ultimately, there has to be the acknowledgement that your wisdom is not your own, but it was given to you by the Almighty. This wisdom was laid up for basically 26 generations from the time of original man and woman, Adam and Eve, until the generation of Mount Sinai. But now it's for the rest of creation to be shared, and because we want to show that there is that divine law. The teachings of them are the foundation of the world. The foundation of the world, you know, it was President Hoover said, the business of America is business. No, the business of every human, family, experience, society, tribe, nation, whatever you want to call it, political system should be for the maintenance of the earth and to try as much as we can to access these teachings from above, which are willing to be shared by others, hopefully with a lot of love. Dennis, your take on these matters.
The wisdom is always there. God is always present. Whether your ears are working or not, he will reach your mind. Your mind is the point of human understanding. If you're not open to different ideas, different suggestions, then you are closing your mind. Your ears may be working, but if you close your mind, it's a waste of time. You must open your mind to any suggestion that sounds worthwhile and it's positive. You cannot ignore it. Why? Because you must make a decision. And those decisions are based on what we were originally taught, whether it was Ten Commandments or any other mitzvahs that were around They're all true and available. But they're timeless. There is no good time to listen to commandments or mitzvahs. They're always there. When you're a little boy, a little girl, or an old man, or an old woman, you must rely on what is your relation to understand between good and bad. You were shown these original commandments or mitzvahs to the point that these are intentions that are given to us that we must follow if we want to stay on the straight and narrow. So why go off on the deep end on something you're not too sure about, or you're going to gamble your life or your mind? Follow your heart. Follow your nose. God will guide you.
Amen. Thank you, Dennis, for your participation today. Robert, before I sign off, any last words or words to be continued into next week?
Yeah, again, he said, you know, we are all children of God, but, you know, God said, you'll be my son. And I think the son is the one who's attentive to his father's instruction. That means you, as my son, you will carry forth my legacy because you understand and you're attentive to what I'm saying. You're carrying forth wisdom. Whereas I can have many children, but I can have those that are as a son to me because I know that you're going to do what I say. When I say the word hear, hearing is not just the audible version of hearing. It is a spiritual version of hearing. It is being in tune to the point when someone says something that you know is godly, you automatically, your antennas go up. You know that's coming from God. I'm not saying that God will speak directly from you from heaven as he spoke to the prophets in that particular way. I'm saying God will make available to you the information that you've been praying about. You may be on the bus, may be on the train, you may be watching a television show, and immediately you'll know that information came from him. And so the wisdom is there, but you have to want it. He's not forcing anything on you. We have the will to do whatever we desire to do. But he says, you know, on earth as it is in heaven. So we must understand that we're only here for a little bit of time. Whether we get the best doctors, whether we eat the best foods, we're leaving. You know what I'm saying? So what he's trying to do is make the time that we do have all about him as powerful as possible to walk in your vocation and your purpose. And the more you are attentive to wisdom, and the more you are turned to him, it is nearly impossible or almost impossible to fail in your task because you realize the tasks are about him and not about you. And then your emotions, like Dennis said, your emotions will come and go, but they will dissipate under the obedience and under the submission of your spirit. And once your spirit is in submission, you can hear everything. When you're out of alignment, when you're listening to your own voice and not listening to the voice of God and his commandments, and what I say here is also reading and hearing what's being said. As you're reading it into your own hearing, then you can, your will is completely bent in that direction. And then your power of discernment goes up, your wisdom is in place. And remember, like you said, it's not yours, it's him. But he won't let you into the party unless you know you need an invitation based on your ability to follow through. You know, he doesn't want you, he wants to promote you, but if your character is not his character, how can he promote you? You're going to embarrass him. Well, I work for God. Well, God wouldn't do that. And if you're a leader and say that you work for God and that's your behavior, people are going to turn away from God. So all these things matter. You have to be careful. Don't, you know, it's his way, not our way. So that's all. And everyone around the world, please continue to tune in. We love you and we appreciate your support. And we definitely have so much more to share as we move forward. And Don, thank you for hosting this amazing program because it means a lot.
No problem. It's you know, I was very tired this morning. I said, you know, I programmed it last night. And I didn't even contact you or Dennis, but I figured you two would pick up on the vibe, and you did. Thank you very much. But so I want to thank everyone for joining today. Again, Dennis Ryan and Robert Walker. And I last night I penned this little piece of improvisational thought, and I like to use that to segue into one day by the Maccabees, which I like to end off the program with this music, which the only instrumentation you hear is the blessed voices of those young men. But before we do, I just want to sign off that, of course, our segue ending transmission is always with Ahava Chad, one love, Goyal Chad, one destiny for all of us, a dark and pleasant, peaceful way. And this little ditty I penned last night, blessed is our eternal creator, an open mind is a free mind, a closed mind is a microcosmic world of chaos. A meditative mind seeks to understand something when in something guided by an empowerment from above, showing every human being with love revealed as divine image, a mind-rejecting meditation is living in a world of inebriation. Seek truth and don't be surprised by where you wind up. However, a person who embraces falsehood will be enamored by lies, degrading others' self-worship, and is the product or the outcome of a lack of self-esteem. So with that being said, we're going to hopefully upgrade our self-esteem with Wonder by the Maccabees. Everyone take care, and hopefully we'll be continuing our transmissions and discussions and soulful urgings for every human being, because we've got now more than 8 billion human beings screaming and streaming into the universe, wanting justice, wanting peace and prosperity. It is possible because we're living in God's world. Therefore, we are empowered to do so. One Day by the Maccabees. Take care, everyone.
Sometimes I lay under the moon and thank God I'm breathing, and I pray, don't take me to, I am here for a reason. But I never let it get me down. So let's go get my feet around. Thank you.